When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, yo, it's the Date Night Movie Podcast. I'm your host, Patrick Russell, and with me is my co-host, Ashley Russell.
Hey, y'all.
This is a show where on each episode, Ashley and I, we talk about a new movie that's playing in theaters, and then we break it down whether we thought it was good or bad and whether or not it would make for a good date movie. And on this episode, we are talking about Jurassic World Dominion. This is the sixth and supposedly final entry.
It should be the final call.
One can pray. Yeah, a long-running Jurassic Park saga. I mean, it's been going on for nearly 30 years. Started back in 1993.
Wow, that's a long time.
Yeah, and you know, before we actually dig into Jurassic World Dominion, I want to spend a few moments just kind of recapping this franchise, because there's been, I would say, a sizable drop in quality after the first film. And in a lot of ways, the first Jurassic Park, it's kind of one of the defining films of the 90s. I would say.
I know my brother was big into Jurassic Park. He read the books. I think you did too. I think it was more geared towards the male sex.
Well, little boys love dinosaurs.
Yeah.
I think it's as simple as that. I mean, I'm sure girls love dinosaurs.
I wasn't pressed to go see this movie. I mean, we weren't
theaters. You didn't see it in theaters.
We did not see it in theaters.
So you caught up with it
I started going to the theaters really was in high school.
Sure.
Maybe middle school, high school time frame. So this was past.
I saw it on TV, like, you know, aired on TV a whole bunch.
I think I did. I think I saw it on TV.
But I guess you don't have like a specific like first impression of the film.
I don't remember it.
But you're a fan.
The first one, sure. But as a kid, I didn't care about it. Like it wasn't. It was. I mean, I wasn't big into dinosaurs.
But do you find that it holds up when you go back to it?
Sure.
Well, for me, yeah, my memory of seeing Jurassic Park in a theater. I was 10 years old, and it's a movie-going memory that I'll always cherish because it blew my mind. Because up to that point, I hadn't experienced like sheer edge-of-my-seat terror in a theater like that. And like when the T-Rex gets out of its cage and it starts terrorizing the kids, specifically it's like terrorizing the kids in the car. For me, it was exhilarating how scary it was. And it wasn't like, you know, mommy, take me home. It's like I'm having a whole hell of a lot of fun. Being on the edge of my seat, like holding my breath.
Yeah.
You know, after the movie, I read the novel, and I remember going back to the theater multiple times while it was still playing. I mean, I really had dino fever that summer. It was like a little 10-year-old pappy. And it, to this day, it remains one of my all-time favorites. I think it's one of Spielberg's very best. And
well, I mean, Spielberg was known for the puppetry, right? Like, I mean, Jaws, it was all big, like, robotic puppet, right?
Computer effects hadn't been used like this up to that point. I mean, you had Terminator 2,
yeah,
which was experimenting with kind of like the liquid metal effect.
Yeah.
But doing like photoreal creatures and mixed with live action work had not been done on this level before. And Jurassic Park, you know, based on the best-selling novel, of course, kind of like a perfect property to test out this emerging technology. You know, like it requires dinosaurs to look real.
Yeah.
And computers were kind of just getting there. But yeah, that first movie, it is just, it's so perfectly constructed because you've got great characters who are played by great actors and a story that proposes a simple what if premise. Like what if dinosaurs and humans coexisted, right? Like how would that go? And then it resoundingly answers that question. It would be a nightmare. It would be a terror shit show. People would die.
Well, but I mean, I would say yes. But at the end of the day, the whole point of Dominion was that dinosaurs and humans can coexist.
Well, yeah, we keep kind of stretching this premise out. But I feel like the first one, just in and of itself, asked the question and then answered it convincingly. Everyone dies. Everyone's running in terror. Like the dinosaurs win in the first one, I would say. I mean, T-Rex is roaring. People are running in terror. Like, humans didn't win that round.
I mean, you are right. You're 100% right.
That's what the movie's saying. Yeah. Like, yeah, man would be no match for these bees.
My question is, like, why create the apex predator?
They don't have respect for it.
Yeah.
They think that they have the power over it.
Yeah.
But again, the whole point of the movie is you don't have the power. These animals who go back millions of years, they have the power. They still have the upper hand.
Well, they got millions of years worth of instincts.
Exactly. That yeah, we, that's a line in the
that
movie.
That humans just don't understand because we weren't there. Like, there's no notes. Like, we can only understand dinosaurs so much.
The real villain of the story is Richard Attenborough, Dr. Hammond.
Yes.
For being foolish enough to think that he could control this kind of power. But again, it's a testament to that movie. He's played by, you know, kindly British Richard Attenborough. You still kind of love him. He's talking about the flea circus.
Yeah.
There's still an empathy for him, even though what he did was horrible. Inviting his grandkids along. I mean, think this shit through, my man. But I mean, I love it. It's just, it's so perfect. And I mean, the casting, like beyond the effects, you've got the casting, like beyond the main trio, which is really well cast. You've got supporting actors like Wayne Knight, Samuel Jackson.
Yeah.
It's just, and they're all, they're given iconic line readings. I mean, everyone can remember like Richard Attenborough's like, "Welcome to Jurassic Park." Like these deliveries. Well,
and Samuel L. Jackson, hold on to your butts.
Like me saying that, not that cool. Sam Jackson saying it, it's an ace delivery.
With, like, I think a cigar in his mouth? Or
he's
like,
constantly smoking. Yeah. Yeah, there's always a cigarette just lit in his mouth.
One of the things that I read later, because Laura Dern and Sam Neill, they're supposed to be love interests in the first film, and she's 23 years old, and he's 45?
Sam Neill was 45 when he...
Yeah, like, there was a 20-year age gap between the two characters.
That means he's in his 70s now. The man's looking good.
Man's looking great.
He's in good form.
Looking back on it, I don't think it would fly casting-wise these days.
Yeah, that's interesting. But yeah, I mean, those actors, I mean, they were great in the original. That's one of the key appeals of this new one, is that they do bring back the original trio.
And not just bring them back. I mean, they were main characters. Yeah.
They're significant characters, although I would argue they don't have a whole lot to do in this film. I mean, they're like a major presence, but I don't think they're well used. But we'll get into that. But yeah, let's, I guess, move on to the sequels, which, you know, brings us to The Lost World. Spielberg, he came back in the director's chair for that one. And, you know, I should say that for me personally, there's really only one sequel scenario that makes logical sense if you're going to continue the story. Because at the end of Jurassic Park, the dinosaurs are out of the cages while the humans escape the island by helicopter. So it's conceivable, if you really need to go further, it's conceivable that sometime maybe in the future, dinosaurs could somehow make their way from the island to the mainland through however whatever means. You find some reason to explain that. Now dinosaurs are on the mainland. And then we'd have scenes of like dino chaos in mundane settings like quiet neighborhoods, shopping malls.
Oh my God, you're talking like metro centers, like a King Kong or like a Godzilla type scenario.
That's the only scenario that makes sense. It's because it doesn't make sense to keep bringing characters back to the island, especially characters who have been there.
Yeah.
It makes no sense. And Spielberg kind of half-assedly gave us this scenario at the end of The Lost World when a T-Rex rampages through San Francisco, but he played it mostly for laughs, like a Godzilla homage, and it's treated kind of like an afterthought. And the bulk of The Lost World, it's Jeff Goldblum going to Site B. There's a Site B where there's other dinosaurs, and he's trying to track down his girlfriend, played by Julianne Moore, who's just there to photograph dinosaurs, and Vince Vaughn is in the mix. He's doing something, and there's a rival group of dino hunters. They're trying to capture these animals and maybe bring them back to create a new park. It's a whole lot of poorly motivated nonsense. And we were talking before, I think your memory of this one is pretty hazy.
It is really, really hazy. I know I've seen it.
I revisited all of them in the run up to Dominion.
Patrick, I think when we were dating, like, you made me watch these movies. Sure. You made me watch.
Sounds like
these,
something I do.
You made me watch these movies.
World. You make it sound like I like held a gun to your head. I think you were down to watch them.
You kind of do sometimes.
No, but you don't really remember The Lost World that much.
I really don't. No,
I'll tell you. As a kid, I was hyped as hell for it. And I even tricked myself into thinking that it was awesome after I saw it. But it doesn't make a whole lot of sense when you rewatch it today.
I need to go back to it. I should.
It's not great.
I need to go back to it.
Well,
maybe not.
I don't think you do.
No. Okay. The third one I remember.
The third one, Jurassic Park 3. You do remember that one.
I do remember the third one.
That came out in 2001. Yeah, there's like a kid, he's parasailing with his dad, and they have some kind of accident, and the kid is stranded on this Jurassic Island. And then Sam Neill has to lead this expedition to get the kid back. The kid's parents are Taye Leone and William H. Macy. And it's like a 90-minute chase movie with terrible characters.
Well, there you go.
But it's the shortest.
Yeah.
So, because this new one we're going to talk about.
It's 2.5 hours long.
Keep these things short. For the love of God. Please. Keep it short.
And then with Jurassic World, I mean, Chris Pratt is one thing. I do not like Bryce Howard, whatever her name is. Dallas Bryce Howard.
Bryce Dallas Howard. There it is.
I am not a fan of hers at all.
Well, she's directed some episodes, I believe, of The Mandalorian that have been well received. So she might be a better director. An actor, like her pops.
Like her dad.
That might be the case.
And if that's the case, then I mean, Mandalorian is a great show.
I'll say this. I've seen Bryce Dallas Howard be good in some things. Jurassic World is not it.
No, she is not. I think she's just like phoning it in, honestly. And the chemistry between her and Chris Pratt is awful.
Well, and let's just talk about Jurassic World. It came out in 2015, and it was directed and co-written by Colin Trevorrow, who was kind of the creative architect of this new trilogy of Jurassic World movies. The general conceit here is that the park is now open for business, right? And Hammond's dream from the first, it's been willed into reality.
It's a reality at this point, yeah.
But that's not all that's going on. Because we're also creating giant mutant dinosaurs in a facility just a mile or two away from an open theme park. And we're also training raptors to serve in the military. Like those are things that are happening.
They've put a lot of things in there.
They really loaded it up with dumb.
Oh, yeah. Like,
and that's my thing with Jurassic World. Like, it got good reviews. It got an A cinema score. It made over $1.5 billion. It sold almost as many tickets as the first Jurassic Park.
You know, Jurassic World wasn't bad. It wasn't awful. Like,
I'm going to argue. I think it is bad. I think it's quite bad.
And this last trilogy was probably the best one.
You're saying the first Jurassic World.
The first Jurassic World.
Is the best of this current trilogy.
Yeah. And that's saying something.
It's better than Dominion, I guess.
And, you know, like, I have, you know, I didn't want to really do this podcast, I'll be honest with you, because I didn't want to dog all over these movies. I don't really like dogging.
I don't either. We don't go to the movies to shit on it. No. But we do this podcast to just talk honestly about how we reacted to something.
I have a certain expectation in the movie theaters that it is an event. And I hold my movies to a certain standard.
I think a lot of people do. I mean, for a lot of people, going to a movie, it's like going to church. I mean, it's you take it seriously and you want to see what you want to see. And, you know, you feel what you feel, and it's a very subjective experience. So, yeah, I totally understand that. So you're saying you have high expectations when you go in.
I have high expectations. And so when these movies are crappy.
Which is often.
I mean, and you know, especially the Jurassic World series. It's just heavy CGI. I wish we would stop doing so many computer-generated films right now, because a lot of actors don't know how to act in a green screen.
There's some dodgy acting.
Yeah, so I mean,
in this film,
the Marvel movies get it right.
The Marvel movies at least get their characters right.
They do.
And they give you, because they get the characters right, that gives you a reason to care about what you're seeing. I mean, again, the first movie gave you a host of characters to care about that felt real, that were intelligent. These are doctors. These are people at the top of their field. These are characters worth watching and who are interesting and who make you feel what they're feeling.
Maybe if there was a progression and maybe them coming back and two
because there's
or something,
no,
I don't know.
There's no natural story to keep going. I mean, the scenario that I laid out with like a T-Rex, you know, stomping through a shopping mall and just dino chaos. $200 million budget. Godzilla. Hard R rating. 100 minutes long. Let's do it. But no, we have to just keep, we have to keep adding human villains to motivate these stories. And that's what I don't understand. Like, in a story where you have all these dinosaurs, why do we, why are we going out of our way to set up human villains?
Because
just humans, have people running from dinosaurs.
Humans technically are the apex predator. We are.
But we establish in the first Jurassic Park that humans ain't got shit on these dinos. Okay, Muldoon in the first movie, he gets flanked by two raptors. He's done. And he's top of his game. So again, we establish in the first Jurassic Park, so just have dinos running amok. And, you know, one set piece after another of people escaping, narrowly escaping, getting chewed up. Loving it, right?
Getting eaten,
minimal characters. Eaten ten, on the toilet. Ten speaking roles. That max. All dino chaos. Just call it Dino Rampage.
It sounds like a good video game.
I mean, it sounds like a fucking movie that you're going to eat some popcorn to. Okay, so yeah, Jurassic World, critics praise it as like it's dumb fun. For me, it is too dumb for me to actually have fun with it. And you, I watch so many dumb movies. I was watching Twister the other day. That's a dumbass flick.
Oh, but it's so good.
I can have some fun with it, though. I mean, a dumb fun movie is balancing the dumb with other elements that make it fun. And these Jurassic Park movies aren't doing it.
I feel like Jurassic World and the first Jurassic movie are very similar. You have the two kids going into the park. Mayhem.
Yes, Jurassic World is built off of the fumes of nostalgia.
Yeah.
That's all it is. It's very cynically constructed. It's lazily put together. There's no tension, but it's a little better than Dominion.
Yeah.
it's watchable. I'll say that, but I don't enjoy it when I watch it. Let's talk about Fallen Kingdom real quick. That's the one leading up into this. That one, it came out 3 years after Jurassic World, and it's directed by J.A. Bayona. So we have a different director in the chair for that one. I would actually say Fallen Kingdom at least looks better than these Colin Trevorrow films. There's actual memorable images in Fallen Kingdom.
Yeah, I mean,
the volcano going off. Yeah, there's some atmosphere.
The running, like, yeah.
J.A. Bayona is doing his best behind the camera. He still has a shit screenplay, and that movie definitely gets into some dinosaur auctions.
Yeah.
Why are we doing dinosaur auctions?
And it gets into human cloning, human geneticism.
We are introduced to Maisie Lockwood in that film, and she is a clone of her deceased mother.
Yeah.
Some people think it's interesting. Like, well, in a world where you can clone dinosaurs, I guess you can clone humans. I mean, I guess, man, but this is a series about dinosaurs. So let's focus on the dinosaurs.
They use the genetics specifically of the Velociraptor.
it's too dumb to even say out loud.
Right. Like, I feel ridiculous.
I do too. When we get into Dominion, like some of the plot points are astoundingly stupid. But at the end of Fallen Kingdom, Maisie, she releases the dinosaurs from the Lockwood estate into the wild.
Yeah.
Which presumably sets the stage for a follow-up and where dinosaurs are finally running amok on the mainland, which is what I've been talking about.
Yeah.
Dinos in shopping malls.
Well, she releases all of the dinosaurs that were in their cages.
Right. We're auctioning dinos off into the black market. We get to see the black market and Dominion because, of course, there will be a dinosaur black market.
Because,
I mean, what the fuck are we talking about in these movies? Why are there dino auctions? Why is there a dino black market? But yeah, she releases the dinos. And I remember she has a line like, they're alive like me.
Oh, no.
It's some terrible line like that. And off they go into the wild. So yeah, presumably in Dominion, we're going to see dinos running amok on the mainland. But that is not quite what we get with Jurassic World Dominion. Why don't we take a quick break? When we come back, we will get into Jurassic World Dominion. We are back, and now we're going to dig into Jurassic World Dominion. This movie, it has a 30% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I mean, good.
That makes it the worst reviewed of the Jurassic Parks. But, you know, ticket buyers seem to be just fine with it. They gave it an A- cinema score, and it had a bigger three-day opening than Top Gun Maverick.
Really? Oh, Top Gun was Fabulous. So
it's families that are fueling this, because it was clearly made exclusively for 8 to 12-year-olds. Though the nostalgia it's pandering to is from 30 to 40-year-olds.
Yeah.
So, I mean, go figure. But yeah, there's going to be some spoilers here, because the marketing hasn't really even touched on the actual plot of this movie. The marketing's kind of just been like, dinosaurs are back, the original cast is back, give us your money. That's kind of been the pitch.
Yeah, it is kind of the pitch, yeah.
So even just discussing the basic plot is something of a spoiler. But broadly speaking, this movie is about mutant locusts that are being genetically engineered by the Biosyn Corporation to control the Earth's food supply.
There you have it.
That's the plot.
With dinosaurs running amok.
There really isn't even a lead character in this movie. It's kind of like an ensemble film, like a Robert Altman film, but with dinosaurs, and if all the characters are terrible.
Oh my God.
Because Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard, they're doing supporting work here, right? Like they were the leads, but now they're supporting.
I mean, thank God, because they have no chemistry. They're supposed to be a couple, and they've taken this girl Maisie into hiding.
I forgot that they're a couple at the beginning of this.
Yeah.
Because in the previous films, it's kind of like, will they or won't they? But here, at the top of this, they are officially together.
Yeah. I mean, they live in together. They're raising this child who is off the grid.
I guess they adopted Maisie. I guess that happened in between movies.
Yeah. They adopted her.
Along with her developing British accent.
Well, she's a clone.
She wasn't that British in Fallen Kingdom.
You know.
Her British accent got way more pronounced in between movies.
Just saying.
Whatever. But Biosyn is run by Lewis Dodgson, who's played here by Campbell Scott. And the name Dodgson will probably ring a bell with hardcore Jurassic nerds, because he is the guy in the original Jurassic Park who is buying embryos from Wayne Knight.
Dodgson! Dodgson! We've got Dodgson here! See, nobody cares.
And it's kind of another testament to the original movie that a short little expository scene has become so memorable and kind of iconic due to the writing and the performances and just Wayne Knight squealing with glee in that scene. Do you remember this? Like when he sees the Barbasol, he's just...
You got so that's great!
But Dodgson, he's running Biosyn, and Biosyn wants Maisie, the clone girl.
Yep.
For reasons that get revealed.
I guess so. Biosyn, ultimately, they want to own the food supply, the wheat, the grains, you know, all of these things. And they're building.
Locusts are going after rival food supplies, right? And leaving the Biosyn food supplies.
Yeah,
alone.
But they're also taking the dinosaur. Because they've got dinosaurs in their park or whatever, their little island, I guess you could say, to create vaccines, to create medicines.
They want to examine dinosaurs for their pharmaceutical purposes.
So
sure.
And Maisie was the first one that it was done with dinosaur DNA. And so they wanted to test her blood, you know, make her a lab rat. Because technically she doesn't exist. Technically she is...
this plot.
I know. And so they don't treat her like a human.
But we find out that she's kind of the key to fixing this locust problem at the end, because Dr. Wu wants to do like research and experiments on her. At one point he's like, I just want to examine you for a little bit.
But this Dodgson character, it's like, didn't really give a shit about anything else but Biosyn, but he comes off as this like, I don't know.
Like he cares.
Like he cares. And right.
But he's very awkward. There's a couple of scenes where he's very awkward. But so, yeah, you know, at the start of the film, like we said, Maisie, she is she's basically the adopted daughter of Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard. And we also find out in these early scenes that Blue, a.k.a. the lovable raptor who can be trained like a puppy, has had a baby, which they nicknamed Beta.
Yeah, all on her own. So pretty much she can reproduce all on her own.
So now we have two cute raptors that are like two little adorable Funko Pop puppy dogs.
that live close to the Pratt family.
So yeah, we introduced Dr. Ellie Sattler, who's played, of course, by Laura Dern, and she's investigating these locust swarms, and she begins to suspect Biosyn is behind it. And so then she recruits Alan Grant for some reason.
She does. She needs somebody that she can trust to get into the locust den, if you will.
Sure. Well, I mean, we need them both. So
I mean, they
can't have one without the other.
You know what? They brought... So if they weren't in this movie would have been even
unwatchable.
It would have been so.
Because I was
worse.
Struggling for the first 20 minutes. I'm like, oh gosh, there's like this is not great.
This is the original cast really
helped
this movie
undoubtedly.
They were the best things in this movie, and I just
yeah, undoubtedly.
Everybody else sucked.
Well, because I mean they've had three movies now to develop their characters, and it hasn't worked.
Has not worked.
So, I mean, there you go. But
and I'm a big Chris Pratt fan, and this is not his forte.
Yeah, he doesn't have a character to play.
Yeah.
So,
and then we find out that Jeff Goldblum is actually,
for some reason, giving lectures
at Biosyn,
which makes no sense.
Yeah.
I mean, everything we know of his character from the first and second film would indicate that he would never do something like this. So he's just taking a paycheck is how he explains it.
I think so. Yeah.
That's a terrible character turn. Him giving lectures for a company he doesn't agree with in the middle of nowhere.
I think the sinister plot behind it was he took this job to get access. Obviously the paycheck was nice, but that's the insinuation. Yes. And I think the original guy that was walking them around the Biosyn plantation or whatever, I think he's the one that hooked up with Jeff Goldblum and told him about the locust problem, which Jeff Goldblum came in and went undercover, kind of, sort of.
Grant and Sattler, they have some inside help.
They do.
As far as investigating these locusts at Biosyn. In the meantime, Maisie and Beta, they get kidnapped and taken to a dinosaur black market in Malta.
Yep.
And and then this leads to a big, noisy chase scene through the streets that seems deliberately cribbed from a Bourne movie.
Yeah.
Very much like a Bourne movie. And at one point, directly ripping off a shot from a Bourne movie. And there's a shot in Bourne Ultimatum where Matt Damon jumps out of a building and into the open window of another building, and the camera follows him in midair. And we repeat that shot with a raptor.
You gotta have a raptor instead of a human.
What are we doing? What are we doing? So, yeah, I mean, if that sounds cool to you, then, yeah, by all means, line up. And so the second half of this movie, it basically shifts to the Biosyn's remote headquarters, which are located in the Italian mountain range. It's in like the Italian mountains.
Yeah, they call it like a safe haven for all the dinosaurs.
They get a ride from this pilot, and like I think like the ship, the plane goes down in midair or something, like pterodactyls take it down.
They figure it out because the blonde chick in Malta, the one that said that Biosyn was in charge of kidnapping the daughter. Yeah, so there's another character that gets introduced who is a pilot who sees the daughter get kidnapped.
And she's a real firecracker.
And she's a firecracker. She's a little pistol.
Love it.
I mean,
love these characters. Love them.
Can I just say one thing?
I mean, we can just stop talking about this plot.
Seriously. There's just so much. I mean, you know.
It all leads to a big, dumb dinosaur fight.
They created this apex predator, one that is, you know, a little scarier than the T-Rex.
And this one's called Gigantosaurus.
Is that what it's called?
That's what they actually call it.
Okay. Well, anyways, like in the sanctuary is, you know, these two dinosaurs are fighting over food. And then that comes to a big scene at the end.
There's this other dinosaur that has claws that are like Edward Scissorhands.
Yeah, that dinosaur is kind of cool.
And so, yeah, there's a halfway decent scene where this dinosaur, like no dialogue, it's like stalking Bryce Dallas Howard, and she has to like get down into like a pond.
Yeah.
to evade it.
Yeah.
And there's a little bit of tension there. I mean, that's one thing that's really missing from all of these sequels is just tension.
Just like the tension of, you know, you see the pond and then you see it shake. That is like, that's, whoa. It's
that's
like
you, a,
something's
yeah.
coming.
Direct example of Spielberg's yeah. mastery of tension. And he is just all over that first movie, just making it as intense as it can be when it needs to be. And even Spielberg himself loses that in the sequel, because the sequel does not have hardly any tension at all. Many scenes are just played for laughs. So yeah, there's this, it sets up this big three-way dinosaur fight between a T-Rex, the Gigantosaurus, and the Edward Scissorhands looking dinosaur. And this has the potential to be a pretty epic smackdown.
But it really wasn't. You don't see it.
It lasts for 5 seconds because the T-Rex just pushes the Gigantosaurus into the claws of the Scissorhands, impaling it. The end.
Yeah.
5 seconds long. I mean, how about a couple of like nips?
I know.
Right? Like
you mostly see the people trying to get into the helicopter.
Can I get a 30-second smackdown
yeah.
instead of five?
Yeah.
Ridiculous. I mean, compare that to like what Peter Jackson was doing in King Kong. Like when King Kong and the three T-Rexes throw down, that scene goes on for like 5 to 8 minutes and they're like scrapping off cliffs. The scene keeps changing locations. And it's a challenge for a filmmaker to make a big scale, sustained set piece. But like, that's the fucking job, man. So in no way am I getting what I want from these movies, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And I haven't been getting what I've wanted for a long, long time. And we need to stop watching these things
yeah.
so they can stop making them. Put dinosaurs in another property.
Yeah.
Stop this fucking Jurassic nonsense narrative. That's cool. There's nothing left.
So, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, you know, everybody is safe. They get the girl. They get their daughter. They save Blue's daughter, Beta. You know, take Beta back to Blue. It's like the dinosaurs and regular animals like horses, ducks, pelicans, whatever, and pterodactyls. They're all living together, and they're all like
we get a montage
coinciding. Yeah,
there's a dumb shot with like horses
yeah.
running with like you know like Magic Hour. It looks yeah. like a fucking Super Bowl commercial.
Yeah,
like with- the Budweiser Clydesdales. Like there's no atmosphere. There's no tension.
So I mean that's pretty much the movie.
Don't see it unless you're 10.
But honestly,
unless you're 10,
okay. What do you rate the? What do you rate it?
I'm gonna give this a D plus.
Yeah, I'll be on the same because, well, maybe I'll give it a D because I like the three characters. Oh, well, C minus.
You're gonna go C, okay?
I'm gonna go C minus because of the three main characters coming back. They really made the movie. If they weren't there, then I would have given it a D minus.
I was thinking the same thing. You were like the legacy characters. You know, seeing Sam Neill, Laura Dern, Jeff Goldblum together again, that made it feel like
mm-hmm.
better than absolute shit. But then the more I thought about it and just all the missed opportunities.
They really did have missed opportunities with
and all yeah. of the stupid shit that we keep adding on to these movies. I mean, maybe I don't have like a cutting edge imagination like Colin Trevorrow, because I really, when I think of like dinosaurs running amok with humans, I think of carnage and spectacle and terror and tension. I don't think about like, what if we also cloned humans? And what if we genetically engineered locusts? Like, I don't give a shit. There's dinosaurs. Let's focus on that.
Calm down.
So, good day flick? Oh, wow. You got to think about it.
Yeah, because I'm actually...
Remember, it's 2.5 hours long.
I know, but I'm actually thinking, yes, it is a good date movie.
You and I did not walk out of this happy.
I'm not saying... I'm just saying like...
For normal people?
For normal people, it's a good... I think it's an okay date movie.
I'm going to say not on your life, but 10-year-olds, 8 to 12-year-olds, absolutely run out and see it. Have a blast.
See,
there's nothing here for adults.
So the thing is like the original Jurassic Park was so scary. These new movies are not scary.
Again, there's no tension.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, that tension, which was so critical and vital to the first movie's success, along with intelligent characters
yeah.
that we respect and are intrigued by.
Agreed.
It's just, it's just all gone from these sequels. And I want it to stop. And I guess that's it.
And we're stopping.
I'm praying that's it. And that is Jurassic World Dominion, directed by Colin Trevorrow. You can find more episodes at anchor.fm/movie date night, as well as on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, where you can rate and review. Don't forget to check out our feature film, Tiny Dancers, which is streaming right now on Prime Video. We are on Twitter at DN Movie Podcast, and you can also email us at datenightmoviepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, I'm Patrick.
I'm Ashley.
Thanks for listening.
See ya.